Welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be explaining what is happening on a biochemical level when we experience an energy crash. If you are someone with chronic fatigue, long COVID, or some other form of chronic illness, energy crashes are probably familiar territory to you. And I think one of the things that can make energy crashes so distressing, at least in the beginnings of the illness experience, is becoming so debilitated, but just having no idea what's wrong or what's happening to you, and of course, how you can fix it and prevent it from happening again. So you may already have an understanding of how your body reacts to certain things and maybe have an understanding of what is going on in an energy crash. But if you don't, this episode is designed to answer that question for you, because with information, we have better understanding of ourselves, and then we can better navigate our illness experience and also hopefully improve quality of life and work towards complete recovery. So I'm going to bore you at the beginning of this episode. Well, boring you is probably relative to the individual and what they find interesting, but I'm going to start the episode off with a little bit of biochemistry. You may or may not know that my original degree was in biochemistry, so I have a very strong biochemical background, although I've forgotten probably a lot of the finer details at this point in time. It was almost 20 years ago I did my biochemistry degree. But we will start off with a little bit of biochemistry around how the body makes ATP. And then I'll use those explanations of the biochemistry to just then elaborate on some other topics and then explain the biochemistry of energy crashes. And then obviously what we can do to help and support ourselves to prevent them, reduce them, and most importantly, in the longer term, actually build our capacity so that we are less susceptible to them altogether. So let's dive straight in. And where I'd like to start on the biochemistry side of things is to talk about ATP production. If you've listened to some of the other episodes in this podcast, you may have heard me say that fatigue is the endpoint of an inability to produce ATP. And ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate, is the body's energy currency. And we make energy, or we make ATP, in the mitochondria of the body's cells. And so when somebody experiences fatigue, it's a sign that there isn't enough ATP to match the demands that are being placed on the individual. And that can come through various mechanisms, some of which I've spoken about in previous episodes, like digestive imbalances, blood sugar imbalances, issues with oxygen delivery to the cells, and talking about the cell danger response and how that influences energy production in the body. So those are different episodes which focus on that specific area of poor ATP production. But what I'm going to be talking about in this episode is kind of the nuts and bolts of how we make energy in the cell. So we need macronutrients, proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, which we get from our diet, and which we obviously need to have good enough digestive health to be able to digest and absorb. But then once we have broken these foods down into their component parts and they've been circulated into the bloodstream and they've got into the cell, the first step is oxidation of these macronutrients. So whatever the macronutrients, whether it's a protein, whether it's a fat, or it's a carbohydrate, each of these macronutrients needs to be oxidized so that it can be converted into something called acetyl-CoA. And this happens in the cytosol of the cell, so not in the mitochondria. And it is an oxygen independent reaction, which means that we don't need oxygen to oxidate our macronutrients. We can convert proteins, fats, and carbohydrates into acetyl-CoA without the need for oxygen. The catch is we only produce a very small amount of ATP when we do this. We only produce 2 molecules of ATP. So this is kind of like a workaround. If somebody doesn't have enough oxygen to make energy, we can still make energy without oxygen. We just can't make as much, which is why poor oxygenation of the body impacts our energy levels and causes fatigue. So without going down too many rabbit holes, that's the first step. The second step is we take that acetyl-CoA that we've made from the oxidation of macronutrients, and it goes into the mitochondria. And this is where we have cellular respiration, also known as the citric acid cycle or the Krebs cycle. So as the name suggests, cellular respiration, we are using oxygen for this step. And so what happens in the citric acid cycle is we go through a series of biochemical steps. So we take the acetyl-CoA, we convert it to another molecule and another molecule and another molecule and another molecule. And as the cycle happens, we are releasing electrons. And it's the release of these electrons which is really important when it comes to making energy, because these electrons then complete the final step, which is oxidative phosphorylation, which is when electrons are transported along the mitochondrial membrane in what is known as the electron transport chain. And when we transport electrons along the electron transport chain, we make a huge amount of ATP. We make approximately 34 to 36 molecules of ATP, which is 17 to 18 times more than what we would make in step one, which is the oxidation of macronutrients. So in order to make energy and to make the most amount of energy, we need all of these processes to be working well because they rely on each other. Yes, step one, oxidation of macronutrients, only makes 2 molecules of ATP, but we need that step to happen so that we make acetyl-CoA, so that acetyl-CoA can go into the Krebs cycle, so that we can make electrons that can then get transported along the electron transport chain. And then in doing so, this is the body's greatest source of energy in the form of ATP. So this is, in a very, very brief nutshell, how the body makes energy. And of course, the effectiveness of this relies on a few things. Every single one of these steps that I've talked about requires enzymes, and enzymes also require nutritional cofactors. So what that means is that in order for the enzymes to be working well, we need to have good levels of nutrients in the body. We can't be nutritionally depleted. And specifically for the production of ATP, the main things we're thinking about are the B vitamins, iron, magnesium, and CoQ10. Those are some of the main nutrients that we need to have enough of for these processes to work well. But additionally, because so much of this is happening in the mitochondria, we need to have an abundance of mitochondria. The less mitochondria we have, the less energy we can make. And we also need those mitochondria to be working well. They need to be in their good health, in their top-notch condition, so that all these processes can work really well. They are the factories of the cell. And if the factory is falling apart and doesn't have the supplies that it needs, then the factories are not going to be able to produce the amount of energy that we want them to produce. And then that is experienced as fatigue, chronic pain, disease, and inflammation. So what is required for these mitochondria to be healthy and work really well? Well, we need to make sure we are adequately nourished. We need to have all the nutrients that I mentioned, which we get from our food and which we can get from supplements. And obviously we need to be able to digest and absorb that food as well. But additionally, we also need to have healthy blood sugar control, because when our blood sugar levels are really, really high, or when we're not getting sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cell, or there's a lot of insulin, or there's insulin resistance, then we're not getting the raw materials into the factory, so to speak. And what we don't use, we lose. So if we're not getting the materials into the factory, then the factory doesn't have anything to work with. It's just going to shut up shop. And these biochemical processes will stop working as well. They'll become deconditioned and undertrained. And that's what happens when we don't manage our blood sugar and we don't have healthy insulin levels and healthy blood sugar control. So we need a nutritionally dense diet. We need a diet which is balanced in terms of blood sugar. But then we also need to have good levels of oxygen. So that means that we need to be breathing well. We need to be getting oxygen from the air into our nose, into our lungs, into our bloodstream. And then that needs to be transported by healthy red blood cells around the body, which also means we need good levels of circulation. So that's a whole other episode, which I have done in the past, but to break it down in a nutshell. And then the other things which could potentially inhibit the in function of the mitochondria could be if there's inflammation. So infections, immune imbalances, poor digestive health, pro-inflammatory diet would all influence mitochondrial function. If there's oxidative stress, which is going to be happening if the body is in a state of inflammation, if it's in a state of threat, if there's nutrient deficiencies, not enough antioxidants, then that's potentially going to be damaging to the mitochondria. If there's a high toxic load, so that could be mold mycotoxins, it could be chemicals from the environment, could be chemicals in your food, it could be chemicals in your beauty care regime, or it could also be, you know, poor liver function, poor detoxification. You know, you're not moving, you're sedentary, you've got poor lymph flow. There's not enough happening to help push out the toxins from the body. And then hormonal imbalances as well. So imbalances in the sex hormones, imbalances in the thyroid hormone can all impact mitochondrial function. So as you can probably tell, like, I'm just touching very briefly on all of these things, but these are all things we need to consider when we're thinking about fatigue recovery or chronic illness recovery. It's such a complex web of what are all the things that are feeding into the end product, which is low energy, and how do we address all of those different things to optimize the function and the health of the cells so that they can produce energy. And it obviously goes beyond the scope of this podcast to talk about each of these specific areas, but these are areas that I have addressed on previous podcasts. So my intention with sharing all of this with you today is hopefully not to overwhelm you, but just to paint this picture of, first of all, this is how the mitochondria work to produce energy. These are all the things that can influence that energy production. And now I'm going to answer the final piece, which is, so what is happening in an energy crash? Well, when we experience an energy crash, what we are experiencing is an energy deficit. So we're experiencing a deficit in ATP. There's not enough ATP that is being able to be produced. And so I explained a little bit about the three stages of energy production: the oxidation of macronutrients, the cellular respiration and the citric acid cycle, and then the oxidative phosphorylation. And so what happens is when the body produces energy through oxidative phosphorylation, the catch-22 is that we also produce free radicals, and that creates oxidative stress in the body. And to back up here and explain is that oxidation is what happens when metal rusts. And biochemically, it's what happens when one molecule loses an electron from one of its pairs on its outer shell. And this makes the molecule unstable, and it can then set off a chain of reactions where one cell after another becomes damaged. So when we produce free radicals, we are creating unstable electrons. And then in the molecules attempt to create stability, we're actually starting to damage one cell after another as we start to look for electrons from other cells or other molecules, shall I say. So oxidation is a natural process of the body. It's continuously occurring in everyone every single day. And in the right dosage, it can actually be self-protective. So when we exercise, we create a little bit of damage, we create a little bit of oxidative stress, but a body that has capacity to recover from exercise actually repairs and then becomes stronger, and then you can exercise a little bit harder, you can go a little bit further, and the body actually becomes stronger and stronger as a result. However, in the context of what we're talking about today, we may have these unhealthy mitochondria because there is hypoxia, not enough oxygen, or there is inflammation because someone is eating an inflammatory diet, or they have a poorly regulated immune system, or an infection, or autoimmunity. There may be nutrient deficiencies, there may be toxins, there may be blood sugar imbalances, there may be hormonal imbalances, there may be medications interfering with mitochondrial function. And all of these things, either just one really big thing or a little bit of all of those things, create unhealthy mitochondria. And then when these mitochondria are then asked to be producing energy because you want to go for a walk, or you want to have a conversation with a friend, or you want to do some chores, or you need to sit down and do some work on your computer for an hour, you're saying to your body, I need a little bit more energy to do these things. And then because your body wants to comply, it'll be like, right, we need to make some more ATP so that there's energy for the walk or the conversation or the hour in front of the computer or the chores or whatever it might be. But then as the energy production ramps up in the cell, so does the oxidative stress. And because the mitochondria are unhealthy, the oxidative stress is much greater than it would be in a healthy person who's going to go for a 5K run, come back, recover, and then get fitter and stronger over time. So instead of seeing a positive adaptation to the stress, what we see is a negative adaptation to the stress, and the body becomes overwhelmed because there is an inappropriate increase in oxidative stress. So as the oxidative stress is increasing as a result of the body trying to make more energy, this is further depreciating the capacity of the mitochondria to produce energy. And it's almost like your body putting on the brakes. You get to a point where you're making energy, using energy, making energy, using energy. But as you're doing this, the oxidative stress load is going up, 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 up. It eventually reaches a point where the oxidative stress is high and it shuts down energy production, and you experience that as an energy crash. And so people will often ask me, what do you do in an energy crash? And for the most part, I kind of think that there's not a lot you can do apart from really allow yourself to rest mentally, emotionally, physically, take as much pressure off your body as quickly as you can. And then the only thing that I would suggest is you can also increase your consumption of antioxidants. And that could be antioxidants from food. So colorful plant-based food tend to be very high in antioxidants. But really, when we're getting to this sort of pathophysiology, what we're ideally looking for would be antioxidant supplementation. So things that my clients tend to respond best to would be glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, which is like the poor man's glutathione. Sometimes things like curcumin, so your flavonoids, can be really helpful as well. But for the most part, we need to pace our body so we're not exceeding our body's oxidative threshold, if we want to call it that, so that we're not shutting down our own energy production. This is why pacing is really important. It's also why when we're in an energy crash, it's not helpful to go and eat a whole bunch of toxic food, which sends your blood sugar out of control, or add more inflammation to the fire, so to speak. Those things will be unsupportive in terms of recovery. And it's obviously often when we feel our worst, that's when we want to reach for the sugary treats and the comfort food. But it's so important at this point in time that we're supporting the inflammation in the body, we're supporting that oxidative load, and then we're adding in perhaps antioxidant supplements on top to support that oxidative threshold. So in terms of preventing this from happening, there's a few different things we're wanting to look at, and this is essentially the essence of fatigue recovery. We want to be doing all of those things that support the health of the mitochondria. Those are the things I've mentioned, making sure there's oxygen, dealing with the inflammatory load on the body, whether that's infections or autoimmunity or food or toxins. Make sure we are nutritionally repleted, so we have adequate amounts of the nutrients that we need. Making sure that we have balanced blood sugar, we have balanced hormones, we're paying attention to medications. Obviously, some medications are necessary, but they can also be damaging to the mitochondria as well. So we need to kind of dance that delicate balance of not taking too many medications that we don't actually need. And obviously, that's a conversation for you to have with your doctor. So that's one piece, and that's what I would call the functional medicine piece. We're supporting all of those things that will positively influence the health of the cells and the health of the mitochondria specifically. Then the other piece is pacing. And remembering that pacing is not just physical activity pacing, but it's also taking into consideration that emotionally challenging circumstances are very tiring. And we can also need energy for mental tasks like reading or working or even listening to things. For some people can be quite hard, or having a conversation because we have to listen and think at the same time can be quite hard. So we need to master pacing so we're not adding to the load of oxidative stress by asking our body to make too much energy and then tipping over into that more inflammatory state. So it's good pacing and then managing the overall health of the mitochondria. And just also understanding, and I've spoken about this on a previous episode, is that it's the nature of the beast that you're going to find that you have crashes. You're going to find that you have flares. And you shouldn't shame yourself or make yourself wrong if this happens. This is actually how we learn our edges. If we've crashed, then we need to reflect on why that happened. Where did we go too far? Where did we not pace as well as what we should have done? Where did we do too much? And then how do we correct that moving forward? And I'll share very honestly, like even where I am in my healing journey today, a client was actually asking me about this the other week, and he was like, oh, you know, how's your journey going? And I said to him, you know, like on paper, I probably have so much capacity compared to my clients. I'm active every single day. I'm going to the gym probably 4 to 5 times a week. I wake up at like 5:30 in the morning. I like to go to the gym at 6. I come home. I have my breakfast. I like to be at my desk by like 8:30. I work very full on days running this business, especially as the client load is getting greater and greater. And I want to see my friends on the weekend. I've got cats that need looking after. I've got house chores that need doing. Just like any other human, I've also got, you know, personal situations, family situations, emotional situations that need to be dealt with. And, you know, there's so much going on. And, you know, I have probably what looks like a very normal life to the outsider. But on the inside, it's still something that I feel like I have to continue to stay on top of managing, given my history and the fact that I'm still working on my nervous system and I'm still dealing with ongoing health niggles. And so even in my life today, I can still have periods of feeling really great and on top of the world, and then what I would call an energy crash. Obviously, the energy crash is not like how they used to be. I can still work, I can still walk, but I just feel a lot more tired doing those things. And this is kind of lifelong management, I think. Different people have different experiences. My experience is that I still have to stay on top of all of these health things. And when I do have these dips in my energy and I look back and I'm like, yeah, you were doing so much, you know, and it's just kind of like tipping my body over with the oxidative stress load and just became too high. Especially, I think as well, is because, you know, I've historically probably been somebody who would overtrain and overwork. Those are my patterns. It's very likely I can fall back into those patterns. So it's something I have to, that's kind of like my norm, to sort of push very hard physically and push very hard mentally. And I have to constantly be working at, you know, having more of a balance in that regard. So I feel like I kind of went on a little bit of a tangent there, but just to say that, you know, when you're in the beginning stages of your illness, you're navigating this on such a micro level, like day to day, you're just trying to keep everything really stable and well-paced. And then as you get more and more well, you're still doing this, but it's in like bigger cycles where you're maybe not having to think so much about how you pace day to day, but then you're thinking about pacing across a week. And then you're thinking about pacing across a month and making sure you are looking after yourself every quarter and every year. You know, there's lots of different cycles involved here, which we want to pay attention to. But hopefully today's episode has given you a little bit more of an insight into your body, understanding that when you're in an energy crash, there is a biochemical explanation for this. And the biggest things we can do, if I was to summarize, it just mean pace. So we're not overexerting ourselves beyond our capacity, addressing the health of the mitochondria. And the other thing is just making sure that we are supporting the body with antioxidants. For the most part, we recommend, pretty much all our clients get recommended glutathione. There's very few clients that don't get recommended glutathione. And it's not because we're the type of practice which is like one size fits all. We are very personalized in what we recommend, but it's just the reason why most of our clients get recommended glutathione is because most of our clients feel the benefits when they take glutathione. So that's just a little share. There is one final piece I just wanted to touch on, because I shared a post about this on Instagram recently, and somebody commented on the post and said that sometimes they can feel like they're in an energy crash, but they recognize that it's more related to some sort of nervous system dysregulation. And when they're able to settle the nervous system, they can feel quite better quite quickly. And I would say that I experienced that as well. So we've got this kind of bigger biochemical oxidative stress energy crash that can happen. And then we can also have more of a freeze state in the nervous system, which is a different mechanism. Because the nervous system acts a lot more quickly, you know, something can happen, it can turn on that freeze state, we can experience some symptoms, but then we can do some nervous system work to shift the freeze state of the nervous system, and some of those symptoms can ease off or subside completely in a very, very short space of time. It's not always easy to know what's what. Sometimes we can experience one, sometimes we can experience the other, sometimes we're experiencing a combination of the two because we have this energy deficit, and then because we're going into stress because of the energy deficits, we also go into a nervous system freeze, so they can be coupled together. I did a separate podcast on being able to discern, you know, what's biochemical or physiological, pathological versus what is nervous system work. And I think the more experience you have just working with yourself as you heal, it does become easier to distinguish between the two. And when you can distinguish between the two, I guess that's where the magic happens, because you can more finely tune your strategies for supporting yourself. But we can always get it wrong. And even with loads of experience, I still get it wrong on myself, at times. So also just to have compassion for where you are right now. Use all the tools you have in your toolbox to support yourself with love and care. And just don't sweat the small stuff. So that's where I would like to wrap up for today. Hopefully you found this episode informative and enlightening. And if you have, please remember to leave a review either on Spotify or iTunes. I think you just need to give me 5 stars. I think on iTunes, you can write a little paragraph if you feel you have the energy for that. And then make sure you're following as well. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening. And I will see you in the next episode.